down people or offend people, but it's also out there to educate. Now, some of these talk show hosts I do not air anymore because some of the hosts do curse a lot, and I do not want to jeopardize the license of WRCT. One thing that we have never done ever in our entire existence at this station. So stay tuned, listen, get informed, and continue to listen to our program. Thank you.
Hey, family, I wanted to pause and thank you for being a part of history. Because of you, we have been able to lead the most successful boycott for Black people in 70 years. Target has felt the impact of a unified Black economic power. You lowered their stock, lowered their valuation, and lowered the CEO salary. But I said to you that we were going to focus on one company at a time. And after Target, next up is Dollar General. The question that I keep being asked is why Dollar General? What a lot of people don't know is Dollar General has three times as many stores as Target and Walmart combined, almost 20,000 in total. Last year, they were able to earn somewhere in the orbit of $40 billion. They are built and planted in underserved and underdeveloped communities and rural areas of 20,000 or less. Do you know that with $40 billion profit, they have never given a dime to a Black organization, a Black school, or Black community? We're championing that they would in fact make room because only 2% of their executive leadership is African American. They don't make space on their shelves for Black vendors and have come into partnership with no Black farmers. They are not helping to stop the food desert. They are a part of it because 90% of what they offer is processed food and not fresh vegetation. I want to say to you what I feel in my heart. Dollar General is not worth a dime. And so I want you to stop going there. I want you to call. I want you to email. I want you to put it on social media that we are not pleased. Many of you who are watching from rural areas, I am asking you if that is your only option, by all means, I do not want to stop your children from eating. But I want you to keep calling, keep emailing, keep sending messages. But those who are in urban centers, keep on walking. Do you know this is how big Dollar General is? 75% of Americans live within 5 miles of a Dollar General. We walked away from Target because they turned away from us. But we walk away from Dollar General because they have never stood with us. It's not worth a dime. Hold back your dollars.
We need to redouble our efforts to movement. We need to redouble our commitment to movements. That's what Black Lives Matter Grassroots is about. It's saying, come in. We have to fight it all. And when we're all there, locked arms, unfortunately, that consultant then hired on two other consultants and essentially stole the resources.
Wow.
And hijacked the platforms which I had been running.
Wow.
So that was one of the greatest honors of my
wow.
life.
Wow.
Yes.
Come on, Madam VP.
Yes, yes. So what a blessing, what an honor to run on a platform.
Yes.
Truth, justice, and love was our platform. That we have to surround our young people. They are the most targeted right now.
Yes.
We have to say hands off our students.
Yes.
Hands off our students. Our Black students are being targeted for criminalization, expulsion. And so we have to bring them in and say the church will protect.
Hey, family, Dr. Jamal Harrison Bryant welcoming you to this episode of Let's Be Clear. I'm out of order. I should have on all Black because I'm going to be talking about Black dollars, the Black church, Black Lives Matter, doing Black business and changing your Black world. My sister has flown in from the West Coast to keep me straight, and I am so grateful to have Dr. Melina Abdullah in the building. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
I'm glad to have you.
Yes.
I dreamed years ago of living in Oakland, California. A lot of people give a credit to Harlem being the heartbeat of the Renaissance, but I really believe Oakland was the fist in the air to change everything for Black America and change Black consciousness. And I don't think enough credit has been given to Oakland. You an Oakland baby.
I'm an Oakland baby. I'm an Oakland baby of the Panther Cub generation.
Yes.
And my mother's daughter, and yes, learned so much from my upbringing in East Oakland. I'm not, yes, from the hills. I'm from East Oakland.
Okay, set the record straight.
That's right. The daughter of a public school teacher who, wow, taught me everything about what it means to organize and make sure that Black people have power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took my model for doing the Black church. A lot of people don't believe it. For doing Black church, I took it from the Black Panthers.
Mm.
J. Edgar Hoover said many years ago, the most dangerous threat to American democracy was the Black Panther Party. And they were guilty of educating Black babies, taking care of seniors, feeding people in the community, monitoring the police. And Doc, at the time, they had 300 paid members. I say that because how many Black churches have 300 members that the FBI don't know about? Because they are no threat. Because they're not doing anything really for the community. I want to ask from you, do you think that the Black church presently is a sleeping giant? That it doesn't know its power, or has it lost its power?
I think the work that you're doing.
Yes.
And I'm speaking as someone who was raised in the Baptist church, but I'm Muslim, right?
Yes.
I came to Islam through marriage.
Yes.
And one of the things that I know for sure is that God wants us to be free.
Mm.
And I think that sometimes we think a church or a spiritual community is a building.
Yes.
I think that sometimes we think it's the text, and the texts are holy.
Yes.
Right? But also God and what the church should be is a servant. We should be servants of God, which means that we usher in freedom and liberation for
that,
our people, and we don't submit to oppression.
Yes.
Right? And so I think that the work that you're doing here, you know, when we talk about Black power, Black, yes, economic power, knowing who we are, saying, you know, daring to say genocide,
yes,
is not okay,
yes,
right? Are all things that should be priority and central to the Black church. And I think that rediscovering what church actually means is kind of where we are. And I think that there's a question in spiritual communities, Black church community,
yes,
about where we are. And so I really appreciate, in fact, I was talking to a sister this morning,
yeah,
who was here, I think she said a week or so ago, when you had whatever that Target
Bullseye thing, Black Market.
Bullseye, yes. And she said it was phenomenal.
Wow.
And that's so much of the work that, yeah, we need to do, not just saying that these are spiritual practices that we take on and we need that spiritual armor.
Right.
But it's spiritual armor to do God's work in the world, including toppling predatory capitalism and white supremacist capitalism,
yeah,
including making sure that Black lives matter. And so I think that's the potential of the Black church,
yes,
and grateful that we in Black Lives Matter grassroots have, we know that we are also a spiritual movement.
Yes.
And we have something called Clergy for Black Lives. And then I'll be quiet, but just before, no, we started, we were talking about how, you know, the uprisings, Black Lives Matter was born in 2013.
Yes.
In response to the murder of Trayvon Martin and the acquittal of his killer.
Yes.
But 2014 was also a watershed moment, and many will mark it as the moment when we exploded as a global movement. That was after the murder of Mike Brown and,
right,
Ferguson.
Right.
Our home was in St. John's Church, right? And,
right,
it was Pastor Starsky Wilson,
yes,
that gave us a home. And I shared with you that although my children are raised Muslim and I practice Islam,
yes,
you know, Pastor Starsky Wilson gave that sermon on the radical revolutionary Jesus Christ. And my then 10-year-old starts walking up the aisle. And we always say that we're Christian for Pastor Starsky. You know?
Right. I love that.
Yeah.
No, that's great. I am overwhelmingly concerned. We have daughters coming through HBCUs. I am overwhelmingly concerned that history is going to mark that we were in the movement in the Trump-Elon era.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Bannon has orchestrated a shock and awe that we are so overwhelmed that we don't even know which hill to charge for. Is it the defunding of HBCUs or the potential of it? The protection of our diasporic brothers and sisters with immigration, because I keep cautioning people, immigration is not just a Latino-Mexican issue.
That's right.
It's about for our mothers and fathers, the dismantling of Medicaid and Medicare. Is it fighting for a livable wage? It's just so much everywhere. What would you say if there be two issues our community should most pressingly lean into in this moment?
So I would say this, that the primary tool of fascism is disorienting the masses.
Mm.
And so the reason that they're coming so fast and furious, where we don't know if people are going to be snatched off a street corner or, you know, whether or not we'll be locked up and become a new generation of political prisoners. The reason that we're seeing a ratcheting up of violence, state-sanctioned violence against Black people, right? With Trump just signed an executive order giving near complete immunity to police to kill with impunity, right? The reason that all of this is happening, I teach Black studies, Pan-African studies, and we're seeing my discipline become outlawed, right? Yeah. Kennesaw State just ended its Black studies program, right? And so the reason that they're coming so fast and furious is to make us feel like we're back on our heels and we can't fight. But our answer has to be, yes, there's two issues, but there's also 200 issues, and we have to fight them all.
Wow.
We have to fight them all. We have to be willing to say fascism cannot be met by saying, look, we going to sit this one out. I hated that on the internet. Black people going to sit this one out. We can't afford to sit it out.
Right.
We need to redouble our efforts to movement. We need to redouble our commitment to movements. That's what Black Lives Matter grassroots is about, is saying, come in. We have to fight it all. And when we're all there, locked arms. And, you know, Pastor Bryant, your work around this Black economic empowerment is so important. We began doing work that we called the Black Xmas work in the name of John Crawford when this Black father was killed inside a Walmart in Ohio in 2014. And we initiated something that we called Black Xmas, where during that period, we only build Black, buy Black, bank Black. And what you've done is explode that and say no place of white supremacist capitalism should see a Black dollar.
Yes.
And we can harness our economic power, and there's no more important time to do that than right now. So great. Then we trust you to help us move that forward. And we have to say these students who are on college campuses who said no genocide on our watch are doing phenomenal work, and we trust them to be audacious and courageous and lead us forward. We can fight all 200, 2,000, 20,000 attacks that come at us when we lock arms and say we are recommitting ourselves to the beautiful struggle that is Black liberation.
I love it. I want to ask you, just for the viewer, because you represent Black Lives Matter grassroots.
Yes.
Yes. So there are two different Black Lives Matter organizations.
Well, we say there's only one real Black Lives Matter.
Okay. So, tell me the difference between the two. Help me.
So absolutely. So Black Lives Matter, again, was born in response to the acquittal of the murder of Trayvon Martin.
Yes.
We were just regular people. So the day that George Zimmerman was acquitted, a bunch of us engaged in what we call intuitive organizing, went out into the streets, shut stuff down, right? Yes. Shut stuff down. And for 3 days, we protested. And in Los Angeles, it looked like shutting down freeways. It looked like marching to Hollywood and Highland and shutting down tourism. And the third day of protest, we called ourselves together and we pledged to build a movement, not a moment. For 7 years, from 2013 to 2020, that's all we were. We didn't have any money. We grew into about 40 chapters all around the world. Wow. And we were just, I'm an educator. That's what pays me. That I teach, right? That Jan was a school bus driver, right? That Mama Paula is in her 70s and retired and decided that this is her life, right? And this is how we moved. We didn't have any money. We had very little or relatively little social media following. And that's what we did. But in 2020, when Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, but also people like Dejan Kizzee and others whose names aren't household names, when their blood was spilled, people said no more. They were extremely generous, poured money into the movement. And we were able to kind of grow in new and different ways. And we had an agreement. There was a co-founder named Patrice Cullors, who I'd been friends with since before 2013. We've been organizing for police accountability for many years. And what we agreed was that she would build infrastructure and I would continue to build on the ground. I described 2020 as the moment when the world cracked wide open.
Yes.
And knew that we had to run as quickly as we can to gather as much justice as we could. And so that's what we did. And I worked with the chapters. I was not worried about the infrastructure or the money. Of course, anytime there's a radical movement, there is there are attacks. The state doesn't want us to talk about abolition and doesn't want us to organize for abolition. So there were attacks, but as you know, I'm from the hood, right? It's not the first time I've been attacked, right? And I'm also of a particular generation. I say my age proudly because the alternative is terrible. I'm 52 years old, right?
Yes.
So it's not the first time somebody called me a name and a Twitter attack does not bother me,
right?
But other generations feel it differently. And Patrice talks about this herself, so I don't feel like I'm betraying her to say it.
Right.
It did hit her really, really hard. And she wound up stepping back and putting in consultants who would manage this infrastructure and were supposed to transition all of the resources that came into the movement over to the movement side, which was now going by Black Lives Matter grassroots. Yes. Unfortunately, some people aren't in it for movement. They're in it to line their own pockets. They're in it maybe to even put down movement. We talked about the Black Panther Party.
Yes.
And so unfortunately, that consultant then hired on two other consultants and essentially stole the resources and hijacked the platforms which I had been running.
Wow.
And so the question becomes, I pray every day.
Yes.
We try to organize to try to get the resources that belong to us back. But then the question becomes, are we going to allow that to stop the work? And the answer is no.
So, okay, but I got to pause you.
Yes.
So there's Black Lives Matter, Inc., or I don't know what
the
they are
Global
called.
Global Network Foundation is what they call themselves.
Okay, the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation, and then Black Lives Matter Grassroots.
Yes.
Okay. You got to do the lost episode of Smarter Than a Fifth Grade. Who bought the beach house?
Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation.
You are not with them.
No.
Okay. Pause right here. So a lot of people are reticent because they don't know, one, that there are two different organizations.
Right.
And transparently, I didn't know that there were two.
Right.
Right. Because I had the chairman of the global network on, and our mutual friend called me and said, hey, pump the brakes. You need to hear another side of the story. And I wanted you to come on because if I didn't know, and I see myself as in this space and doing this work. And I had no idea that there were two different mechanisms that are moving. So somebody who is watching and saying, okay, I can get with the grassroots organization. I don't align myself ideologically with the global network. How do I know which one to go to? That's what I want to know. How do I, if I'm Googling or trying to find out, I want to be in Black Lives Matter, but they're two different outfits, how do I find you?
So we are BLM Grassroots on all social media, and BLMGrassroots.org is our website.
Okay.
But you can also distinguish just by, look, you're a spiritual leader, right?
Yes.
Use your spirit, because if someone, so this is my first time wearing eyelashes since my 50th birthday.
Right? They look great on you.
Thank you. But if the person looks like they are wearing couture, they've never been on a protest line, that they have to have a full face of makeup, that they are, there's nothing wrong with people living a nice life,
yes,
living a soft life. But when that soft life comes from the blood of our murdered loved ones.
Yes.
When that soft life comes because my home has been swatted with me and my children in it, police surrounding us with assault rifles three times. I've had guns pointed to my chest. I've had white supremacists roll up in motorhomes, right? When their mini mansion in Alpharetta comes from that, then that's a problem. Right. And so this is not condemning anybody.
Yes.
Who decides that they want to dress nicely. And some people do wear lashes every day. I don't. Like to, you know, stand on front lines. Mostly. Yes. Sometimes a red carpet is nice. But
yes.
Mostly it's front lines.
And yes.
A lot of language that I can't say here.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But I always say a cuss is really, the root is a curse. So it's a religious, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so we have to, the distinction is, are these people, you can summon your own spirit. What does your spirit tell you? Are the people who are doing the work, do they have dirt under their nails? Right.
Yeah.
And Black Lives Matter Grassroots does. We also house all of the chapters, including Black Lives Matter Grassroots Atlanta, including Black Lives Matter Grassroots Florida, which is actually led. We now have 1, 2, 3 chapters that were founded by the families of those killed by police.
Mm.
So our Black Lives Matter Houston chapter was founded by the mother of Jalen Randall, who was killed by police there.
Yeah.
Our Black Lives Matter Florida chapter is founded by the Andrew Joseph family.
Yeah.
And then our Black Lives Matter Milwaukee chapter is also led by a family. And so, you know, the relationships that we have with the families and the demands don't sound like your standard demands. We are unapologetically abolitionist in where we stand. So sometimes mayors don't like us very much when we say stop Cop City. And when we say, you know, chant it all the way down, the dollars need to go to mental health resources and housing, not to more police. So those are the ways that people can draw the distinction. But it's Black Lives Matter grassroots.
No,
grassroots.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I'm saying to you, I didn't know heretofore to look for Black Lives Matter grassroots.
Right.
I just had an umbrella. My entree in my college years of street protests and activism was Rodney King.
Mm.
And famously, can't we all just get along? I'm asking you, really not even to poke the bear, what would have to happen for one Black Lives Matter to come together?
Well, we've always said the return of our resources. So the resources that my mother donated,
yes.
My mother, who's a retired elementary school teacher, never bought new clothes for herself, always shopped at the thrift store and called it Nordstrom's, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The dollars that my mother donated, that families donated, that probably people in your family donated. Yeah.
And church
donated. Yes. That's right.
Yes.
And the work that we did, the following that we had.
I got to pause you right here for the viewer. Black Lives Matter, the year of George Floyd, outraised the NAACP, the Urban League, the National Action Network, Rainbow Coalition, hear this, combined. So we're not talking about no small little bit of money. It's a whole lot of money that was amassed. So when she's talking about her mother's Nordstrom money and the church money, I want you to understand in part, because I want them to have the full breadth of what we're dealing with. We have been in a target movement in part because of what was pledged and given to corporations that we now cannot be able to trace and find. I just wanted to put it back that we're not just talking about nickels and dimes here, but it's a whole lot of money that was collected under Black Lives Matter. That our dear sister is referencing, but I just wanted to
to give that number in 2020 through blacklivesmatter.com, which is Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation controls those funds. $90 million came in 2020.
Whoa.
$90 million. So to get along, you don't get to run off with the $90 million that was intended for the movement.
Yes.
The reason that our people donated is so that we could be on front lines, so that we wouldn't have to keep hijacking the work copy machine to make flyers, right? So that we wouldn't have to say, well, you know what? We can't really afford to fly Erskine Jenkins' family to Lubbock, Texas, where this young man, college sophomore, we're the parents of college students. Yeah. College sophomore was killed by sheriffs on the campus or off campus at Texas Tech.
Right.
We have to get them to rent vans to get 30 people to Lubbock to say, no, you will investigate my son's murder.
Yes.
Right? We shouldn't have to do that because there should be the $90 million from 2020, but also there's been 5 years since 2020 where $15 million, $20 million have come in. Hundreds of millions of dollars that could be used to really power the movement forward.
Yes.
Rather than making social media posts and, you know, buying people mansions or mini mansions.
And I want to really say, you're the professor, anthropologically, sociologically, or psychologically, Black Lives Matter under either umbrella resonated with a generation that historic movements did not. That said, I see myself and Black Lives Matter, and I'm a child of the NAACP, I'm former national youth director, is resonated with a group that said, we don't need a convention. We don't need a banquet.
Right.
We don't need a vendor hall.
Right.
We want to to get it out the mud, as it were. And I think a larger conversation has to happen. Put the money aside. I can't, but put the money aside just for the sake of the philosophical argument is to see why white supremacy would find hellish delight in our division. Because in this moment, transparently, and I was not a member of Black Lives Matter, in this moment, Black Lives Matter is more poised to speak truth to power than those who are the existing pillars. Mm-hmm. And I'm, Dr. Abdullah, I'm really at a crossroads for myself.
Mm-hmm.
As a leader, but also as a faith leader. This is, Doc, the largest generation of black people since we've been in America who don't go to church. It's the largest generation of black people who don't ascribe to organized religion. It's the largest number of black people at 6% who self-identify as atheist. We've not been at that number.
Right.
And so in moving this target movement, as it were, I wanted to push it under the black church to get the black church in the conversation. Now, I'm getting ready to throw you a layup. Because Black Lives Matter, history will record that aside from Marcus Garvey, Black Lives Matter was the very first movement in the country, civil rights movement, not birthed out of the black church.
Mm-hmm.
It was the very first movement that leadership did not come from a faith leader outside of Marcus Garvey.
Well, and the Black Power movement and the Black Panther Party.
I was coming to bring you in.
Yes.
The Black Panther movement still had, and I'm going to make myself a student in your class.
So, no, I'm a student in yours.
Yeah, well, we're going to be in each other. Let's pull each other. But the Black Panther Party movement, even in their meetings, their town hall meetings, still had a DNA of the black church. The rallies in those meetings still had that same energy, even if it was a recessive gene, even in that speaking moment. Whether we're dealing with Huey P. Newton or Sister Angela, still had the tempo and the vibrato of the black preacher. So you could still find the tenets. Mm. The Black Lives Matter movement did not call an assembly, as it were. The Montgomery bus boycott for 381 days. Every night they went back to the church. They didn't call it revival, but they were having a mass meeting. A shift happened, Doc, for Black Lives Matter, and I'm an outsider, from Black Lives Matter that said, don't meet us at the Y or the rec center or at St. Philip. Meet me downtown. You're going to meet us downtown to pull these pieces together. And the black church looked from outside. And I'm going to give an indictment of the black church that I am proudly a part of. The black church, Doc, did not know how to support what it didn't lead. So because we weren't out front, we just said, y'all go do it. And so a generation came, you throwing those numbers out, that's giving me full midlife crisis, that was 2014. That was 2015. I'm like, where has the time gone?
Right. That's right.
Yes. And so in a back way, and I had another guest here, is another obstacle for the black church in Black Lives Matter is how did the black church position itself to support queer sisters? I'm trying to find the right political language. Same gender loving sisters. So they were at odds on several fronts, on how it is that we move and how it is that we function. And so you go from 2014 to 2025 is a 10-year gap. Would be the first time that the church is trying to find its footing.
Right. Right.
Because the people who will, there is no revolution without young people.
That's right.
And young people are not coming to the church in order to ascribe to give us your direction.
Right.
On where do you say it? How does the church find holy matrimony with grassroots?
That's such a beautiful question.
Yeah.
and so much in that, so yeah. much in that. So I really appreciate, you know, we know the way that we grow.
Yes.
And the way that we empower ourselves as a collective is yes. through criticism and self-criticism.
Yes.
And so the willingness for you to talk about what does the church do
yes.
to move Black power, I love that question. I also want to offer that in our criticism and self-criticism, part of what we did in the formation of Black Lives Matter back in 2013 Ooh. Is really take lessons from the Black Power movement, right?
Yes.
So I'm of the Cub generation, Gen X, I guess is what they call yes. this hip-hop generation.
Yes,
right?
I'm with you.
All of
yeah,
that,
don't lose
right?
me. Yeah.
All of that. And one of the things that Sister Afeni Shakur, Tupac's mother, wrote when in her autobiography is she said, one of the greatest shortcomings of the Black Panther Party and of the Black Power movement was that it was completely devoid of spirituality.
Mm.
And so one of the lessons mm. that we intentionally infused in Black Lives Matter, although church folk who weren't there may not see it, is trying to understand that spirit and trying to embrace.
Yes.
Spirit is our most powerful tool. So what folks who are outside may not know and may not see is the first thing that we do when someone is killed by police or white supremacy is we go out to the space that they were killed and we pour libation and make a prayer circle. And sometimes we leave those spaces literally with their blood on our shoes.
Mm.
So Black Lives Matter was born as a spiritual movement. And mm. it might not look the same, although sometimes right. it does. Pastor Starsky was our home
right.
in Ferguson.
Right.
right. But even in L.A., when before we had enough to buy in Black Lives Matter, Grassroots did not buy a mansion or a beach house, but we did buy the Center for Black Power, which sits on the corner of Crenshaw and Vernon mm. in the neighborhood, which right. is wide open for Black people to use as organizing space, right? Before we had that building, we met. It was McCarty Memorial Church that hosted us. It was Ward AME that hosted
yes.
us. That gave us space to meet. It was even spaces, conservative Black churches where, yeah. you know, you're not even supposed to wear fingernail polish. They were like, look, you fighting for Black people, come on
right.
in. And Pastor Marcus Murchison did that for us. And so there was, we don't want to under-recognize the potential. We've been, so you said holy matrimony. We've been dating a long time.
Listen,
so,
let's put a ring on it.
A long time.
Yes.
And so I think that this also, you know, 5 years after the uprisings, but also at a time when we face fascism and know that this has to be another moment when the world is cracking wide open.
Yes.
What are we going to do? So you talked about comings together. I think for some things, when you were talking about the Global Network Foundation, we've always said, just come and do right.
Yes.
Right. But I think that there's an opportunity for all of us who want to come and center Black liberation and bring all of what we have, the church, we haven't talked about the masjid, which is
yes.
my spiritual community, right?
Yes.
Other spiritual practices, all practitioners, but all regular people, people who are searching. And sometimes our young people might not be a part of a church community because they feel like it's distant from them. And
yes.
but what are you doing about me? You mm. know, what are you doing about the fact that I'm getting snatched up? What are you doing about the fact that I know I have a target on my back, right? That they will come to spirituality when spirituality speaks to them.
I love it.
And so I think that we have an opportunity right now. They talk about disaster capitalism. Naomi Klein writes about this all the time, right? Disaster capitalism. White supremacist capitalists seize upon disasters to make their things happen. That's what
yes.
Trump, Vance, Musk, and all of them are doing, right? But we also, what's not as written about, is disasters also offer opportunity for us to recalibrate and say, what does our resistance look like as abolitionists, toppling what they are doing, but also building what it is that we want. And that's what you do when you say, yeah, we boycotting Walmart and Target, yes. right? But we're also building Black economic power.
I love all of it.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, as an educator, your daughter's coming out of Howard University, but you teach at a PWI.
I teach at an HSI, Hispanic Serving Institution.
Tell me what that is.
We are more than 70% Latino.
Really?
Cal State LA. Yeah.
Give me the initials again.
HSI.
What does that stand for?
Hispanic Serving Institution. I don't use the term Hispanic, but that's the official designation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I never heard that before.
Yeah.
HSI.
I teach at an HSI.
I'm going to get a T-shirt.
We're more than 90% students of color.
Wow.
But we still have challenges because the Black student population is very, very small.
Yes.
So even at an HSI, it's important that we have Black student support systems all across the country.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You done redirected my question.
I'm sorry.
No. You're helping me.
Right.
At an HSI.
Yes.
As a sister professor at an HSI, tell me what your mind frame is teaching this level of discourse to a demographic that over 50% voted for Trump. So we've talked about the reconciliation of two different Black Lives Matter. I only in my daydream can I think about what an alliance would look like between the Black community and that community.
So where I am.
Yes.
And what we didn't talk about is I also was very honored to run for vice president. I ran with Dr. Cornel West.
That was you.
That was me.
Okay, I got to stop right here. So we had him on.
Yes.
He was on last summer. He was on last summer. I didn't connect the dots.
Yes. So that was one of the greatest honors of my
life.
Wow. Yes.
Come on, Madam VP.
Yes. Yes. So what a blessing. What an honor to run on a platform.
Yes.
Truth, justice, and love was our platform. What an honor to run on a platform that says,
I introduced you all wrong. We got to start the show all over again.
We good.
You're supposed to be vice president.
Ha. Huh. Look. We gonna do it.
Okay, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah. I think that what we did on that ticket and what we are attempting to do is, you're gonna get me all the way down the road. So there's a book series by Octavia Butler. So
yes.
You know, we're readers, right?
Yes.
Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents, which you know comes from church community, right? In those books, Octavia Butler introduces this protagonist named Lauren Olamina, who's this young Black woman. And what's happening is the apocalypse. They call it the pox, right? And it feels like it's Donald Trump for sure, because, in fact, the campaign slogan of the incoming president is Make America Great Again. I kid you not. She wrote these novels in 1997 and 2000.
Insane.
And so she writes these novels and all of these things are happening that are fires in Pasadena where she's from. Right.
That's in the book.
It's in the book. The world is on fire.
I'm downloading it today.
Yes.
Yeah.
read them in order, though.
Okay.
Right? There are assaults on people of color. There are a group of haves and have-nots. There are people attempting to wall themselves into these places that have privatized police and privatized fire, and they're safe, but everybody else is not, right? And so what happens is people try to find, there are some who try to find a comfortable place in oppression. But really, and I don't want to give away the book.
Yes.
Right? Or the books. But really what she offers is that we have to build what she calls Earth Seed.
Hmm.
We have to radically imagine the world that we want to live in. We have to radically imagine the world that's right for our children and for future generations and be willing to put in the work for it. So in this moment, in this political moment, it's really important that we say, yeah, they're doing all of this stuff that's the apocalypse. It's the apocalypse that they're ushering in.
Yeah.
And our answer is not how do we survive? Our answer is how do we build for something radically new? And I don't want to, again, give away the books.
Spoiler alert.
But what we know, you got to read them both to the end. Otherwise, you'll be depressed.
The next time I see you, I'm going to give you my book report.
But what we know is when we invest in that, and what Dr. West and I were trying to do with our platform is say, everybody, we have enough resources in this country for everybody to be housed.
Yes.
We have enough for not just a minimum wage, for a living wage.
Yes.
We have enough so that we can even have free time, y'all. We can have space to worship and engage in our arts, right?
Yes.
There's enough here. And so what we were trying to do is put forward a platform that is radically imaginative. And I think that this is a time where we say what wins against fascism is not being tepid, right? It's not being liberal in our thinking and saying, oh, we wish the Democratic, if Joe Biden, remember those Biden years, that's not the answer,
right?
The answer is to say, what do we really want and need and deserve, and how do we get it? Use this moment of disaster to say that we will have a world of freedom, liberation, beauty, love, truth, love, and justice.
I love all of it.
Yeah.
Now, can we form an alliance with the Latino Hispanic community?
For sure. So we see it happening. Like, what I love about the Free Palestine movement, right? Free Palestine movement, people have been saying, some people will go, why are Black people going so hard for Palestine? The Palestinians went hard for us.
Yes.
How did I learn how to survive tear gas? In 2014 in Ferguson, when the Palestinians were like, no, pour milk in your eyes, right? Palestinians have been going hard for us, and the Black Palestinian Alliance goes way back. Well, in places like Los Angeles, yes, there are some, I think that they are mediated hostilities, hostilities that white supremacy tries to feed, right?
Yes.
They try to say your enemy is the Latinx, the brown brother who probably got a Black grandma anyway, right? That's your enemy. So we don't look up and say, no, white supremacy is my enemy. But we're understanding, just like there were alliances before, we got to be clear, right?
Yes.
When we talk about the Black Power movement, there was also a brown power movement, a Chicano movement that was moving at the same time. There was a Red Guard moving at the same time. There was a Third World Alliance moving at the same time. Well, we're starting to see that happen also, right? That when we have these community safety teams, it's Black folks on the community safety teams. It's brown folks on the community safety teams. It's indigenous folks who we haven't talked about who are getting hemmed up for deportation in a land that is theirs, right? So we got to remember that this also is a, there is a prospect of more deeply rooted alliance among all people of color and all freedom-loving people.
No, I love it. As an educator, I want you to really push for pastors who are watching about how necessary it's going to be. Malcolm X famously said, it's a poor position for the oppressed to allow their only education to come at the hand of their oppressor. We've got books that are being banned, curriculums that are being unfunded, departments that are being gutted out. And as we are now encroaching on the summer months, Vacation Bible School from the Baptist church you grew up in got to look a whole lot different. We can't be coloring Noah's Ark this summer.
That's right.
Yeah, I want you as an educator to really push forward where churches really need to have summer school a little bit different in terms of what we are reading, what we are understanding. I want you There are no cameras, no lights to tell them, say, Jamal, if you're bringing all your middle schoolers, high schoolers together, what should I have them reading? What should I have them discussing?
Sure.
Yeah.
So one, I think it's really important that we understand how foundational that's been to the Black church. There's a reason Pastor Starsky went from pastoring St. John's in St. Louis to leading the Children's Defense Fund and the phenomenal work that they do with their freedom schools.
Yes.
Right. And so it's important that we say we're working right now, actually, with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley on the Book Saves Lives Act.
Yes.
Right. Book Saves Lives. Yeah. Book Saves Lives
Act. Yeah.
To make sure that we do the opposite of what Trump did and is doing, right, with the book banning, right, that we have to say we want them to read everything. We want them to read everything. We want them to read about abolition. We want them to read about what freedom looks like. We want them to read with your teenagers. They're not too young to read Octavia Butler.
Yes.
Right? Have them read Octavia Butler. Have them read, you know, phenomenal works. I would say one of the things that I've loved reading also is Russell Maroon Schultz. Have them read about freedom fighters who walk among us. Russell Maroon Schultz was one of the political prisoners who never submitted to his own capture, freed himself from prison, not one, but two times, right?
Yeah.
And said his teaching is never submit to your own capture. And
tell me, is, say the name
Russell
again.
Russell Maroon Schultz, his book is I Am Maroon.
I've not read it. You helped me today.
Look, when we finish, I'm going to send you a whole book. It's one of my favorite things
I love it.
But for pastors, what I would say is also this. Don't be afraid of our young people.
Mm.
So sometimes we think, this is my space. I do it too because I'm a mama, right?
Yeah.
I'm a mama and I'm an educator. I think I know. Let me teach you about, why are you not reading We Do This Till We Free Us? Maybe that's not what they want to read right now.
Yeah.
Although Miriam Kaba is phenomenal, right? So we have to have enough trust in the young people who speak to other young people differently than we do.
Yeah.
So these young ones, let's surround them. And we haven't had time to talk about, but I just want to drop the seed that we have to surround our young people. They are the most targeted right now.
Yes.
We have to say, hands off our students.
Yes.
Hands off our students. Our Black students are being targeted for criminalization, expulsion. And so we have to bring them in and say the church will protect them.
Yeah.
The mamas will protect them.
Yeah.
And so when you have your vacation Bible school, I want you to bring in all of these students from Justice for Justice in Palestine organizers at Morehouse who might not do it the way that the church thinks is right.
Yes.
Right? Might say, I don't know about, we got to stop saying, I don't know about their tactics. I agree with their message. No, their tactics are the tactics of the time. And we got to get with their tactics. We got to catch up. And so that's what I would offer, is to not always say, we got to, you've raised this initially, right?
Right.
We don't always have to lead. Sometimes we got to say, come on, you lead, and we got your back.
You are amazingly brilliant.
Oh, you are as
no,
well.
No, I'm telling effortlessly.
Thank you.
You done gave me 20 books without blinking that I haven't even heard of or read, but I feel like my home assignment has now just been given me. I'm honored just to breathe the same oxygen as you and to be in your space. And I am grateful to be able to glean from your wisdom. And I look forward to building our people and building a community together.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pastor.
Yes.
Brother.
Yes,
brother,
there it
I
is.
I hope this is our first, but not our last.
Absolutely.
I claim it to be so.
I receive it.
Yes. Thank you.
Madam
so much.
Vice President, I am so grateful. You are the leader of the free world. I need you to please stick around, stay locked in, and make sure you are following Black Lives Matter grassroots.
Yes.
They are on the ground. They are doing the work, doing the heavy lifting, and they are not afraid of getting dirty with blood, sweat, and tears. Stay locked in. Those of you who are subscribers, I got something else that I want to show. Make sure that you don't go away, but I want you to share, like, follow, comment, and then subscribe. Love you. Thank you.
Thank you. We are Lions. We bring hope where it's needed. We are a global force for good. Support causes that matter. Change lives. Change communities. Change the world. We can do more together than we can alone. Join in. Experience the joy of serving. Be part of the movement. Give back. Let's unite the world for good. We are Lions. You can be too. Visit weserve.org. Everyone has a community, a neighborhood, school, kids' teams, where you worship, work, work out, or any other place or group where you choose to belong. Communities can provide support when you need it, and even when you don't know you do. Like when it comes to preventing underage drinking and other substance use, community members can be your eyes and ears when you're not with your kids and alert you to signs of potential problems. Learn more at talktheyhearyou.samhsa.gov.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
I just had another dizzy spell and almost fell. I'm scared they will get worse and never go away.
You're not alone. 69 million people suffer from dizziness and vertigo.
I wonder if there's help.
There is. The Vestibular Disorders Association has a helpline at 800-837-8428 or visit liferebalanced.org.
Can you repeat that?
800-837-8428 or liferebalanced.org.
Sponsored by the Vestibular Disorders Association.
Thank you for listening this week. We'll see you next Sunday from 5 until 6.
Hello, I'm Kevin Jameson, volunteer and president of the Dementia Society of America. Please request our free guide filled with facts about dementia. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. Thank you.
What if the second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented? Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect yourself without leaving your home? Colorectal cancer is highly preventable. Screening is important, safe, and most people have options. Ask your doctor which screening test is right for you. Learn more from the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at getscreened.org.
You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, streaming online at WRCT.org.